following program is intended for mature audiences.
They used to bounce messages across the earth. Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show. Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows? Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
We're ready. We're ready. Yeah, we're ready. 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 We're ready. We're ready. Yeah, we're ready. 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 We're ready for the
California, land of fantasy and make-believe. It's the Vino Veritas. Featuring host, writer, humorist, experiential mystic, raconteur, and parallel parking expert, Tom Savino. Now, here he is with Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth, Tom Savino.
Good evening, everyone. Tom Savino here from Burbank, California, with a Savino Veritas coming to you live from the land of make-believe and fantasy. And we are living a make-believe and fantasy government, and I wish it were make-believe and fantasy. Tonight, Trump by the numbers on Savino Veritas Live.
The 2016 election, or as you may know it, I thought I wanted it to be over, but now that it's over, I wish it was still going on, because it turns out the ending is even worse, 2016.
The 9 traits of narcissistic personality disorder.
A grandiose sense of self-importance.
One who exaggerates achievements and talents and expects to be recognized as superior without commensurate achievements.
And here's his report card on the school. And he talks about excellent. What grades you get? Quality of presentation, quality of everything. Excellent, 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 excellent. All excellence, 100%. And then in the back, he talks about other things, all excellent. In other words, he gives a report that gives it excellent, wonderful. He gives it 5+, with the rating as high as you can go, where it says excellent. He marks it 5+, 5+, mostly 5+. The Trump University or Trump entrepreneurship.
That make me crazy.
2, is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love.
Putin likes Donald Trump.
Does that make me crazy?
3, he believes that he is special and unique.
He believes that only he can be understood by or should associate with other special or high status people or institutions.
I alone can fix it.
Does that make me crazy? Possibly.
4, requires excessive admiration.
All of this space was full when the president took the oath of office. We know that 420,000 people used the D.C. Metro public transit yesterday, which actually compares to 317,000 that used it for President Obama's last inaugural. This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period, both in person and around the globe.
Come on now, who do you, who do you, who
5 has a very strong sense of entitlement.
As a president, I could run the Trump Organization.
Bless your soul. You really think you're in control? Well, I think you're crazy.
6 is exploitative of others.
Why won't he release his tax returns? And I think there may be a couple of reasons. First, maybe he's not as rich as he says he is. Second, maybe he's not as charitable as he claims to be. Third, maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal tax. He didn't pay any federal income tax.
That makes
me
smart.
Seven, lacks empathy.
The narcissist is unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings and needs of others.
Written by a nice reporter. Now the poor guy, you got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. I don't remember. He's going like, I don't remember. Maybe that's what I said.
You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals.
Pretty much I went on various television shows and bashed Rosie O'Donnell.
There you go.
But maybe I'm crazy. Maybe you're crazy.
8 is often envious of others.
I would have won the popular vote if I was campaigning for the popular vote. And I would have won that much easier than winning the Electoral College. There are millions of votes in my opinion. Now, I'm going to do an investigation.
You're now president of the United States. What you have presented so far has been debunked. It's been called false.
Take a look at the Pew reports.
I called the author of the Pew report last night, and he told me that they found no evidence of voter fraud.
Really? Then why did he write the report?
He said no evidence of voter fraud.
Then why did he write the report, according to Pew report? Then he's groveling again. If you would have looked on one of the other networks and all of the people that were calling in, they're saying, we agree with Mr. Trump. That speech was a home run. That speech, if you look at Fox, okay, I'll mention it in your network, see what Fox said. They said it was one of the great speeches. They showed the people applauding and screaming, and they were all CIA. You and other networks covered it very inaccurately. We had the biggest audience in the history of inaugural speeches. I said the men and women that I was talking to who came out and voted will never be forgotten again. Therefore, I won't allow you or other people like you to demean that crowd. Here's a picture of the crowd. Now, the audience was the biggest ever. I would actually take that camera and take your time if you want to know the truth. One thing this shows is how far over they go here. Look how far this is. We are going to have a better plan, much better health care, much better service treatment, a plan where you can have access to the doctor that you want and the plan that you want. We're going to have a much better health care plan at much less money.
Maybe we're crazy. Probably.
Number 9. Regularly shows arrogant, haughty behaviors or attitude.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away. You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha-ha. Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet. And when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll...
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Hey everybody, Tom Savino here. You're listening to Savino Veritas live from Burbank, California. We're doing Trump by the numbers tonight. Trump by the numbers. We had 9 traits of narcissistic personality disorder. Donald Trump is clearly suffering from narcissistic personality disorder, but not as much as we're suffering from his narcissistic personality disorder. And, okay, here's some other numbers. 56 interesting facts about the 2006 elections. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's victory was definitely the most interesting thing that happened in 2016 election. But it certainly wasn't the only interesting thing. In keeping with our end-of-cycle tradition, we found 56 more interesting things to tide you over during the holidays as we take a well-earned break. And this is from a website called National Politics. President, these are 56 interesting facts. Effectively, 77,759 votes in 3 states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, determined the presidency. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump won by 22,748 votes in Wisconsin. That's 0.7%. And third-party candidates, interestingly, received 188,330 in Wisconsin. So without those third-party candidates, Trump would not have won. And just a reminder, everyone, you're coming to you from Lion's Den Studios. We are not soundproof. We are not foolproof, but we are 90 proof. So if you hear planes and motorcycles and boats and trains, that's tough. What can I tell you? Hopefully enjoy the rest of these facts. So we Hillary Clinton, we the people of the sane world would have won the election. 44,307 votes in Pennsylvania. That's what he won by in Pennsylvania. That's also 0.7 of a point. And in that state, third-party candidates had 218,228. Again, without the third-party people, Hillary Clinton would have won. In Michigan, 10,704 votes in Michigan. That's what he won by. That's 0.2% of a point. Third-party candidates received 250,902 votes. Again, without third-party candidates, clearly Hillary Clinton would have won. Number 2 on the list of interesting facts, Macomb County in Michigan, York County in Pennsylvania, Waukesha County in Wisconsin, those counties elected Donald Trump. If those 3 counties had cast 0 votes, Trump would have lost all 3 states and the election. By the same logic, just three counties re-elected President Obama in 2012. Miami-Dade County in Florida, Cuyahoga County in Ohio, and Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. Three, Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton carried the popular vote by more than 2.8 million votes and a 2.1 percentage points. But while she narrowly improved on President Obama's margin in non-swing states from 4.1% versus Obama's 4%, she vastly underperformed in the 13 swing states that actually mattered. Obama's 3.6% margin in those states morphed into a 1.8% Trump lead. Four, there have been 58 presidential elections in the United States. The popular vote and the Electoral College have gone in the same direction in 54 of them. These are the exceptions. In 1824, Andrew Jackson won the popular vote and a plurality of the Electoral College vote, throwing the election to the House of Representatives, where John Quincy Adams beat Jackson. In 1876, Samuel Tilden won popular vote, but Rutherford B. Hayes won the Electoral College. In 1888, Grover Cleveland won the popular vote, and Benjamin Harrison won the Electoral College. And of course, in the very famous 2000 election, Al Gore won the popular vote, where George W. Bush won the Electoral College. And as I had mentioned on previous shows on Savino Veritas, which is what you're listening to now, and on the Frank Cotullo Chronicles, that election, in my opinion, and the opinion of Vincent Bugliosi, who is a prosecuting attorney, and was the prosecuting attorney in the helter-skelter Charles Manson case, where he effectively and successfully prosecuted, Trump, I wish that were the case, but prosecuted Charles Manson. And that there are really a lot of similarities between Charles Manson and Donald Trump. But in that election, Vincent Bugliosi and I believed that the United States was taken over by a coup. By the way, this is Savino Veritas Live, and we just got word from the Washington Post that General Flynn, who's Trump's conspiracy theorist general, did in fact talk to Russia about sanctions prior to that phone call that was made after the election. So more on that. We'll see what happens. So far, all of the shocking things that happened are just sort of, oh, well, that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, just keep going. That's okay. So far. I don't think that's going to last too much longer. We're on fact number five. Trump won the White House by winning 76% of counties with a Cracker Barrel old country store. Wow, that's interesting. He won the White House by winning 76% of counties with a Cracker Barrel old country store and 22% of counties with a Whole Foods market. This 54% gap is the wildest ever recorded. I'm sorry, is the widest ever recorded. When Bill Clinton was elected in 1992, it was 19%. When George W. Bush was elected in 2000, it was 31%. And when Barack Obama was elected in 2008, it was 43%. Interesting. Six. That's why I'm reading this to you, because it's interesting. To be honest, as you could probably have gathered by now, it's the first time I'm reading this. I'm so well prepared, ladies and gentlemen. Six. The state with the largest increase in total votes cast for president versus 2012 was Texas, 12.2%, while the state with the sharpest decrease was Mississippi, -6.7%. The state with the largest pro-Republican margin shift versus 2012 was North Dakota, at 16.1%, while the state with the largest pro-Democratic margin shift was Utah, 30% shift from 2012 in Utah. They don't like Donald Trump in Utah. And I've gained a lot of respect for people in Utah because of that. 7. Orange County, California voted Democratic for president for the first time since 1936. Meanwhile, Elliott County, Kentucky voted Republican for the first time since it was founded in 1869. Well, I wish they would lose it now. Number 8. There is only one county in the United States that voted for Barack Obama by more than 20% in 2012 and voted for Donald Trump by more than 20% in 2016, and that's Howard County, Iowa. 9. Clinton did better in 2016 than Obama did in Arizona, Georgia, and Virginia in 2012. 10. In 2016, Clinton won California by 8 points, more than Obama did in 2012. She lost Texas by 9 points, while Obama lost the state by 16 points. 11. Overall, the national polls were not as wrong as they appeared to be at the first glance. The final Real Clear Politics running average had Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton up by 3.2 points. At this writing, her actual popular vote margin is 2.1 points. And I think the 2.1 point gauge or prediction was also accurate with Nate Silver. 12. On average, polling in 2016 was closer to the results of the election than it was in 2012. President Obama's final popular vote margin was 3.9 points. But the Real Clear Politics running average before election was 0.7 points, a difference of 3.2 points. The difference in 2016 was just 1.1 points. 13. The approval ratings of a lame duck president, which of course was Obama, and right now we have Donald Trump, who is the lame schmuck president. But the approval ratings of a lame duck president are seen as a critical factor in predicting the success of his party's nominee to succeed him in the White House. But it's clear that it is not the determining factor. Three of the last four-term presidents had approval ratings above 50% for the entire fall of the election year. Those three, Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama, also ended the fall with approval ratings in the high 50s to the 60s, yet only one, Reagan, saw his party succeed in holding the White House for a third term. Two-term presidents and post-election approval ratings, the Gallup poll. Well, we'll skip that. It's a graph, and it's kind of hard to explain on radio. Number 14, for the entire cycle, Clinton aired 39% of all presidential ad occurrences on broadcast. Trump aired 12%. Bernie Sanders also aired 12%. And Jeb Bush's super PAC, Right to Rise, aired 4%. 15. Clinton aired 187 unique spots on broadcast TV throughout the entire election. And Trump ran just 40 unique ads. 16. 80% of broadcast TV ads in the presidential general election were either negative or contrast ads. 17. 60% of all general election presidential spots on broadcast TV were anti-Trump, while only 20% were anti-Clinton. 18. The most frequently talked about issue on broadcast TV in the presidential general election was jobs. The issue was mentioned in 21% of the ads. On that note, let's hear Stephen Colbert and the energy lady talking about energy and jobs.
Let's make this next one a good one. Okay. Chapter 5, Energy. Energy is no game. It's a vital part of our economy. But what if it was a game? We'd be A-Rod strapped to LeBron's back being thrown downfield by Tom Brady. Because we have only 5% of the world's population, yet we use 20% of the energy. We're beating expectations by 400%, according to my diesel-powered calculator. The point is, America is winning energy. If you watch TV, and I pray you do, you know that our nation's biggest potential employer is America's oil and gas producers. The reason you know that is a series of powerful energy ads which prove that the way to get this nation back on track is through coal mining, oil drilling, drill mining, coal oiling, oil milling, drill coaling, and droil milling. So here with more on the exciting opportunities provided by America's oil and gas producers is the attractively authoritative yet approachable woman from those ads. The following is a paid advertisement.
Thanks, Stephen. Big fan of you and your work on The Stephen Colbert Show. In today's energy economy, Americans are looking for real solutions, and America's oil and gas producers can bring those solutions today and all of tomorrow's today's tonight. And you can trust me because I'm speaking with a clear and soothing tone of voice. I'm speaking slowly so you know that what I'm saying is true. We are today's energy companies, not your dad's energy company, the one which existed in a statistically corollary but not proven to be causal relationship with his emphysema. We're forward-thinking, positive, and make generous use of uplifting background music because it connotes cleanliness. The fact is, America has some of the greatest energy resources on Earth, which, according to our guessologists' objections, if used in combination with technology yet to be invented or imagined, could sustain us for the next 6,000 years. Do you think any other country has those advantages? Think again. Then, think again about today's energy companies today. Also, jobs. Did you know that in terms of raw supply, the United States is the Saudi Arabia of coal? Or that we're the equivalent of two Saudi Arabias of natural gas? Without our reliance on fossil fuels, we would suddenly find ourselves the Saudi Arabia of not comparing ourselves to Saudi Arabia. Then where would we be? That's why we need an all-of-the-above approach to energy. That means exploiting yesterday's oil and gas reserves today, while exploring for tomorrow's energy of the future now. And that approach depends on policies like approving the Keystone XL pipeline to bring either 800,000 or a different big number barrels of safe, polite Canadian oil to American refineries. This pipeline would significantly jobs America's energy, power, security, safety. It's common sense. So join us, and together we can work together to secure America's energy future and create jobs together. That's why, right here in America, today's energy companies have already begun to jobs tomorrow's energy by leveraging innovation and pioneers we've technologied. Clean future and jobs can work all of the above energy policy future now, as well as future jobs and energy job. Energy future policy jobs. And together the jobs we need to jobs our country forward towards a sunnier and jobbier energy job future. Won't you join us? Job.
Thanks, actress playing someone I can trust. Listeners, she's right. Oil powers this country, and it has since the early 1900s. Before that, it was horses. And slaves, but let's just focus on the horses. In 2010 alone, America consumed nearly 7 billion barrels of oil, To put that in perspective, if you put that many barrels of oil end to end and then painted them all green, then painted eyes and fangs on the front, it would look like a really long snake. Scary stuff. But there are so many more places we could be drilling for America's future. We could easily drive down the price of gas by a dollar or more, and all we would have to do is let petroleum companies ravage our national parks. Sadly, a sinister conspiracy is hoarding these resources for themselves. The powerful and shadowy cabal known as campers.
The Emperor's New Clothes. Many years ago, there was an emperor so exceedingly fond of new clothes that he spent all his money on being well-dressed. He cared nothing about reviewing his soldiers, going to the theater, or attending intelligence briefings in the West Wing. He cared nothing about going for a ride in his carriage, except to show off his new red Russian ties. He had a coat for every hour of the day, and a bathrobe, and instead of saying as one might about any other ruler, the king's in council. Here, they always said, the emperor's in his dressing room, the fourth floor in the men's department at Nordstrom's. In a great city where he lived, it was the best city. Life was always gay, except in Indianapolis, Indiana. Every day, many strangers came to town, and among them one day came two swindlers. Sad. Two swindlers, very sad, corrupt, evil, bad. They let it be known they were weavers, and they said they could weave the most magnificent fabrics imaginable. Not only were their colors and patterns uncommonly fine, but clothes made of this cloth had a wonderful way of becoming invisible.
to anyone who was unfit for his office or who was unusually stupid. Those would be the best clothes, the most wonderful clothes, tremendous clothes, thought the emperor. If I wore them, I would be able to discover which men in my empire are unfit for their posts. Sad. I could tell the wise men from the fools. Yes, I certainly must get some of this stuff woven for me right away.
He promised the two swindlers a large sum of money that he said he'd pay after he was satisfied with the work.
Smart, smart thing to do.
They set up two looms and pretended to weave, though there was nothing on the looms. All the finest silk and the purest old thread, which they demanded, went into their traveling bags while they worked at the empty loom as far into the night.
I'd like to know how those weavers are getting on with the cloth, the emperor thought.
But he felt slightly uncomfortable when he remembered that those who were unfit for their position would not be able to see the fabric. It couldn't have been that he doubted himself, yet he thought he'd rather send someone else to see how things were going. The whole town knew about the clothes' peculiar power and were all impatient to find out how stupid their neighbors were.
I'll send my honest old ministers to the weavers, the emperor decided. He'll be the best one to tell me how the material looks, for he's a sensible man, and no one does his duty better. Good man, tremendous.
So the honest old minister went to the room where the two swindlers sat working away at their empty loom. Heaven help me, he thought, as his eyes flew wide open. I can't see anything at all. But he did not say so. Both the swindlers begged him to be so kind as to come near to approve the excellent pattern, the beautiful colors. They pointed to the empty looms, and the poor old minister stared as hard as he dared. He couldn't see anything because there was nothing to see. Heaven have mercy, he thought. Can it be that I'm a fool? I'd have never guessed it, and not a soul must know. Am I unfit to be the minister? It would never do to let on that I can't see the cloth.
Don't hesitate to tell us what you think of it, said one of the weavers.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's enchanting. The old minister peered through his spectacles. Such a pattern. What colors? I'll be sure to tell the emperor how delighted I am with it.
We're pleased to hear that, the swindler said. They proceeded to name all the colors and to explain the intricate pattern. The old master paid the closest attention so that he could tell it all to the emperor. And so he did. The swindlers at once asked for more money, more silk and gold thread to get on with the weaving. But it all went into their pockets. Not a thread went into the looms, though they worked at their weaving as hard as ever. The emperor presently sent another trustworthy official to see how the work progressed and how soon it would be ready. The same thing happened to him that happened to the minister. He looked and he looked, but as there was nothing to see in the looms, he couldn't see anything. Isn't it a beautiful piece of goods? The swindlers asked him as they displayed and described their imaginary pattern. I know I'm not stupid, the man thought. So it must be that I'm unworthy of my good office. That's strange. I mustn't let anybody find out, though. So he praised the material he did not see. He declared he was delighted with the beautiful colors and the exquisite pattern. To the emperor, he said, it held me spellbound. All the town was talking of the splendid cloth, and the emperor wanted to see it for himself. While it was still in the looms, attended by a band of chosen men, among whom were his two old trusted officials, the ones who had been to the weavers, he set out to see the two swindlers. He found them weaving with might and main, but without a thread in their looms. Magnificent, said the two officials, already duped. Just look, your majesty. What colors? What a design! They pointed to the empty looms, each supposing that the others could see the stuff.
What's this? Thought the emperor. I can't see anything. This is terrible. This is sad. Am I unfit to be the emperor? Oh, of course not. What a thing to happen to me, of all the people. Oh, it's very pretty, he said. It has the highest approval. Tremendous. And he nodded approbation at the empty loom. Nothing could make him say that he couldn't see anything. His whole retinue stared and stared. One saw no more than the other. But they all joined the emperor in exclaiming, "Oh, it's very pretty." And they advised him to wear clothes made of this wonderful cloth, especially for the great procession. Magnificent, excellent, unsurpassed, tremendous, the best, were bandied from mouth to mouth, and everyone did his best to seem well pleased. The emperor gave each of the swindlers a red hat to wear, and the title, "I Made America Great Again." Before the procession, the swindlers sat up all night and burned more than 6 candles to show how busy they were finishing the emperor's new clothes. They pretended to take the cloth off the loom. They made cuts in the air with huge scissors. And at last they said, "Now the emperor's new clothes are ready for him." Then the emperor himself came with his noblest noblemen, and the swindlers each raised an arm as if they were holding something. They said, "These are the trousers, here's the coat, and this is the mantle," naming each garment. "All of them are as light as a spider web." One would almost think he had nothing on, but that's what makes it so fine. "Exactly, precisely, tremendous," all the noblemen agreed, though they could see nothing, for there was nothing to see. "If your Imperial Majesty will condescend to take your clothes off," said the swindlers, "we will help you on with the new ones here in front of the long mirror." The emperor undressed, and the swindlers pretended to put his new clothes on, one garment at a time. They took him around the waist and seemed to be fastening something. That was his train, as the emperor turned round and round before the looking glass. "How well your majesty's new clothes look! Aren't they becoming?" he heard on all sides. "That pattern so perfect, those colors so suitable. It is a magnificent outfit." Then the minister of public processions announced, "Your majesty's canopy is waiting outside." "Well, I'm supposed to be ready," the emperor said, and turned again for one last look in the mirror. "It is a remarkable fit, isn't it?" He seemed to regard his costume with the greatest interest. The noblemen who were carrying his train stooped low and reached for the floor as if they were picking up his mantle. Then they pretended to lift and hold it high. They didn't dare admit they had nothing to hold. So off went the emperor in procession under the splendid canopy. Everyone in the streets and the windows said, "Oh, how fine are the emperor's new clothes! Don't they fit them to perfection? And see his long train? And lock her up! Lock her up!" Nobody would confess that he couldn't see anything, for that would prove him either unfit for his position or a fool. No costume the emperor had worn before was ever such a complete success.
"But he hasn't got anything on," a little child said.
"Did you ever hear such innocent prattle?" said his father. And one person whispered to another what the child had said.
"He hasn't anything on, and the child says he hasn't anything on."
The emperor shivered, for he suspected they were right. But he thought, "This procession has got to go on." So he walked more proudly than ever, as his noblemen held high the train that wasn't there at all.
Today, President Trump told a U.S. military audience that there have been terrorist attacks that no one knows about because the media choose not to report them. It has been a busy day for presidential statements divorced from reality. Mr. Trump said this morning that any polls that show disapproval of his immigration ban are fake. He singled out a federal judge for ridicule after the judge suspended his ban, and Mr. Trump said that the ruling now means that anyone can enter the country. The president's fictitious claims, whether imaginary or fabricated, are now worrying even his backers, particularly after he insisted that millions of people voted illegally, giving Hillary Clinton her popular vote victory. There's not one state election official, Democrat or Republican, who supports that claim. Margaret Brennan is covering the president.
Radical Islamic terrorists are determined to strike our homeland.
In his first address to the troops as Commander-in-Chief, President Trump accused journalists of covering up terrorism.
It's gotten to a point where it's not even being reported. And in many cases, the very, very dishonest press doesn't want to report it. They have their reasons, and you understand that.
Mr. Trump offered no examples, and neither did Press Secretary Sean Spicer when he tried to clarify aboard Air Force One.
There's a lot of instances that have occurred where I don't think that they've gotten the coverage it's deserved.
The president's comments come after senior advisor Kellyanne Conway referred last week to a terrorist attack that never took place.
Two Iraqis came here to this country, were radicalized, and they were the masterminds behind the Bowling Green massacre. Most people don't know that because it didn't get covered.
She later said she misspoke, but she had talked about the purported Bowling Green attacks at least two other times. Conway now says she was referring to two Iraqi refugees accused in 2011 of supporting terrorism. Their arrests were reported in the press.
Thank you for listening tonight to Trump by the Numbers on Savino Veritas. This is Tom Savino saying be with us next Thursday and every Thursday, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 Eastern. See you on Juice Talk 2. Bye.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.